Love your fellow woman and love your fellow man, and remember always live your life the best that you can. When it's raining, skies are gray and you're feeling bad, think for a minute about what's making you sad. You might be short on money, but what's that really worth? All the money in the world couldn't buy you birth. In a race of millions, you're the only sperm that scored. You passed the hardest test already, life was your reward. Stop feeling down and out and start having a ball, cause being alive is the greatest gift of all. You can sing and dance, you can smoke and drink, you can run, jump, eat, sleep, walk, talk, or think. So cheer up, smile, laugh away your sorrow. Today it might be raining, but the sun will shine tomorrow. And focus on what's there, not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens, and what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man, and remember, always live your life the best that you can. Some folks complain when it's raining sleet, then they moan and groan in the summer's heat. You're alive, who cares? Cares if it's cold or hot, just try and be grateful for all that you got. Thank God you have food, cause some people don't. Thank God you're getting educated, some people won't. Thank God you can see, some people are blind. And thank God for all the friends that you find. Thank God for the weekend, the snap, the daily grind. Thank God you can sleep each night and rest your mind. Thank God for the books of Moses, 1 through 5. But most of all, thank God you're alive. And focus on what's there, not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens, and what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man, and remember, always live your life the best that you can.
Greetings and blessings, blessings and greetings, blessed souls. We're now alive because we want to stay alive in Torat Chaim, instructions of life, Torat Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torat Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You just heard to begin the show with Ari Lesser's Life a cappella style, and this is Soul Class 504. Today's presentation will be Heart to Heart from Jerusalem to the Rest of the World, program presentation 41. Blessed is our Creator, Shalom, / peace and bracha, / blessing upon the human family experience. With Creator's help, our next broadcast is taking place right now on July 19th, 2015, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA Unified Soul Actualization. And program content will focus on reading from a link from the www.hearttoheartamerican.org/ website. Our call-in number is right now, in this most existential of moments, 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. Unfortunately, Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstuck has been a little bit under the weather, and that's why I've been doing these efforts in a solo fashion, and hopefully the Most High will restore Rabbi Goldstuck in a way that he will be able to go machayel lo choyel, from strength to strength. That being said, blessed souls, I want to pluck out an inspiration from today's Hayom Yom, which is a section from, and by the way, today's program is dedicated to the Refuah Shlema, complete healing of Harav Eliezer Mordechai Halevi, Ben, son of Chaya, Shena Rachel, may she rest in peace. So, listeners, we want to pluck out at the beginning of today's program from a teaching that the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzhak Schneerson of Lubavitch, wanted to share with us from his father, the 5th Lubavitcher, Rabbi Shalom Dov Ber Schneerson of Lubavitch. And it reads like this. When the Mashiach, the Messiah, will come speedily in our time, Amen, then we shall really long for the days of the exile. Then we shall truly feel distress at our having neglected working at Avodah, meaning the service that we are supposed to engage in as human beings, all blessed and anointed with a divine image. Then we will indeed feel the deep pain caused by our lack of service towards the Creator and our fellow human being. These days of exile, and I want to emphasize these last days of exile, are the days of avodah, of serving, to prepare ourselves for the coming of Mashiach, the Messiah, speedily in our time. Amen. So, blessed souls, let's not wait until the redemption comes. Perhaps already we should feel distressed. And again, this is not to give anyone a low self-esteem. This is not to rebuke as much as to encourage, because any feeling that we feelings feel upon this blessed earth as we are living human beings, is energy trapped in a certain context. And when the energy is trapped within a distress, or what we saw in Agmas Nefesh, kind of like a pain for the soul, we can make that brave decision to redirect that energy by by focusing on positive things. I just want to share with you, blessed souls, that Rabbi Goldstock is going to be going for surgery in next month, and Rabbi Goldstock, thanks for holding up the ship. And again, we're asking for immediate refuah shlema that the surgery should be not needed for Rabbi Eliezer, Rav Eliezer Mordechai Levy ben Chaya Shena, and also for the nishmas, and also Gam Neshama Tehila Bas Chana Leia Bas Miriam, Miriam Sara Bas Bose Leia, and Chana Bas Malka. So Eliezer, there it is. And I hope you're feeling better, and you should go from strength to strength. And I gather you're listening to me right now live from Yerushalayim. And I'm going to throw you a virtual kiss to you, that from heart to heart, from my heart to your heart. So, let's go back to this Hayom Yom teaching. Let's take that energy of distress and pain that we are feeling by not doing enough and redirect it to even small, minute acts of kindness to each other. First of all, we should know when we do an act of kindness, we're actually doing a kindness to ourselves, because we're making ourselves a vessel for the Creator's blessings. Then we can reach out to our family members or friends or community and whoever we can interact with, and hopefully we can share that heartful kindness with other people until this world be brimming with kindness, because unfortunately we see in the world there's just too much hatred going on, too much jealousy, and too much unnecessary competition. If we can direct our hatred towards hatred of our lack of alacrity towards making it a better world, or our hatred towards the fact that we have had jealous feelings in the past, we can, on the most existential level, say, I don't want to be jealous of anyone anymore. And of course, get out of this competitive mode, whether you're in a capitalist system, or a socialist system, or a fascist system, whatever system you're a part of, in a monarchy. Now that might seem idealistic, it might seem utopic. And Rav Goldstock is also asking that today's program be dedicated for Refuah Shlema for Yosef Yitzchak ben Ofra and Matasiah ben Rachel. So we share those bakashas to the Most High to bring that healing should be elicited upon these people, should be most evident that these individuals have been healed by Rofei Kol Basar, the healer of all flesh. So with that being said, blessed souls, I want to share also, before we start to read from the links to the website of Rabbi Goldstock and his HS Chaya, his wife of Valor, Chana Tova, as I'm looking at their Facebook page, which, by the way, is Eliezer M. Goldstock. That's E-L-I-E-Z-E-R M. Goldstock, and his wife is Chana Tova. Beautiful picture of the couple. And with that being said, I want to share something from the Ramak, the Rav Moshe Karavera, in a classic work that there was a wonderful thing done several years ago that Harav Dov Cohen Fink, who I believe lives in Jerusalem, and Rabbi Goldstock Skyped me back, Refuah Shlema Lukulam. Everyone should have Refuah Shlema. Amen. So that's the blessing from the rabbi, the doctor, Guta Mensch, from the Holy Land of Jerusalem. So, blessed souls, I want to share this teaching from Moshe Cordovero. And this book is talking about how the 13 Midos of Mercy, Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim, should be revealed to our human action. By us learning about the divine attributes of the Creator, let's see how we can integrate it within ourselves so we shouldn't feel distressed when redemption comes But we feel right now we're doing what we can to make it a better world. And here it goes. Just as the Holy One, blessed be He, desires neither our disgrace nor our suffering because of our relationship, so too a person should not be desirous of his fellow's disgrace, suffering, or downfall. Rather, he should be pained by it as if he himself was actually suffering that same pain, or rejoicing in the person's good fortune as if he were enjoying that same good fortune. And when I say he, of course, I also mean a she, meaning any man, woman, child, adolescent, elderly person. Again, if we can get into this mode of thinking, thought by thought, moment by moment, and see how it can morph into the next moment, let us rejoice in the good fortune of others. And for those who can, bear it, to feel the pain of others. But again, not just to feel the pain, but will it stir you to a positive action? So one of the things that Rabbi Goldstock and his wife of valor, Rabbits and Hannah Tova, decided to do was to integrate within their website, which is hearttoheartamerican.org, something called the Down Blogger. And also, they integrated into their website the National Down Syndrome Society. So I'd like to read first from the National Down Syndrome Society and then move on to the Down Blogger. Here we go. The first years of life are a critical time in a child's development. All young children go through the most rapid and developmentally significant changes during this time. During these early years, they achieve the basic physical, cognitive, language, social, and self-help skills that lay the foundation for future progress. And these abilities are attained according to predictable developmental patterns. Children with Down syndrome typically face delays in certain areas of development, so early intervention is highly recommended. Meaning, blessed souls, remember, you see someone who needs help, surely you'd want to help them, just as you surely would want to be helped as well. And it can begin any time after birth. But the National Down Syndrome Society wants us to know the sooner it starts, meaning our intervening to helping the parents and the child, the baby itself, who has been born with Down/Up syndrome, the better the child will develop. And it's also for the betterment of the family to realize they're not alone. What is early intervention? Early intervention is a systematic program of therapy, exercises, and activities designed to address developmental delays that may be experienced by children with Down syndrome or other disabilities. In fact, these services are mandated by a federal law called the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, also known as IDEA, and certainly it's a great idea. The law requires that states provide early intervention services for all children who qualify, with the goal of enhancing the development of infants and toddlers and helping families understand and meet the needs of the children, which is critical, blessed souls, because there can be the goal of enhancing the development of these tiny, teeny tiny human beings at the beginning of their blessed life, but if the families are not made to realize they can access information, help them understand the situation of their newborn child, he or she, how much more so when the family does not feel the ambivalence, when the family doesn't feel guilt, when they feel empowered by the knowledge they can help the facilitators of various treatments and therapies meet the needs of those unique children, those atypical children. The most common early intervention services for babies with Down syndrome / Up syndrome are physical therapy, speech and language therapy, and occupational therapy. So when should early intervention start? Early intervention should begin anytime shortly after birth and usually continue until the child reaches age 3. An amendment to IDEA, which is again the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, In 2004, allow states to have early intervention programs that may continue until the child enters or is eligible to enter kindergarten. The sooner early intervention begins, the better, but it's never too late to start. Now, I'd like to give you a little insight by reflecting back to you, Blessed Souls, which I think I've shared on this program and other ones, about the early intervention that occurred to myself. I did not benefit from the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act because I really wasn't born with a disability as much as I was born with what the world would call a birth defect. I was born with a paralyzed left arm, a condition which is described as Erb's palsy. Now, my mother who gave birth to me and my grandmother of blessed memory, my father's mother, took action right away. Being that I was born in Hartford, Connecticut in 1962, thank you, Hashem, for bringing me this life and continuing to sustain me with the lovely family that I have on my parents' side and my wife's parents' side. My mother and grandmother, may she rest in peace, intervened and brought me to a children's clinic connected with Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. Now, I don't remember the therapies I went through, but as it was described to me by my mother, that I went through a series of vigorous massages and physical therapy to try to stimulate motion at that point in the beginning, very tender stage of my life with physical therapy and massages. And about 5 or 6 weeks after I was born, lo and behold, my mother and grandmother of blessed memory were actually left me out in the parking lot of a supermarket. Because back in 1962, you didn't have to worry about what people unfortunately are worried about today if they leave their child out in a parking lot. Of course, Hashem was watching over me as well, the Creator. And when they came back to the car, they saw me sitting in the baby seat, gingerly moving my pinky or one of my other digits on my fingers, and they realized that something was going on, something very special. Now, with that being said, I went on to get further therapies. In fact, I went to get chiropractic approaches. And with that being said, I went on to become actually quite athletic. I mean, not at the level where I was scouted by, you know, the pros or anything like that, or pro scouts, but I played baseball. And eventually I was able to catch a no-hitter by a young man who was a good, outstanding pitcher at the junior high and high school level, Billy Perino. And from someone who went from 1962 to being born with a paralyzed left arm to being able to catch a no-hitter as a catcher in a hardball baseball team, I can tell you that it was a great boost to my self-esteem. So that's my take on when should early intervention start. Again, my condition was not a disability as much as it was a birth defect, if you want to get technical. But just to show you, blessed souls, that and Rabbi Goldstock has been very prone to comment that even before all these services can kick in through the IDEA Act, that for the first 2 years of the child's life, the love and the hugging and all the attention that a newborn baby would receive, certainly a child with Down syndrome, is just as entitled, rightfully so, to get the same loving treatment as any other child born upon the face of this blessed earth. So going on further with this article or this presentation by the National Down Syndrome Society, how can early intervention benefit a baby with Down syndrome? Development is a continual process, a continuous process that begins at conception and proceeds stage by stage in an orderly sequence. There are specific milestones in each of the four areas of development: gross and motor or fine motor abilities, language skills, social development, and self-help skills that serve as prerequisites for the stages that follow. Most children are expected to achieve each milestone at a designated time, also referred to as a key age, which can be calculated in terms of weeks, months, or years. because of specific challenges associated with Down syndrome, babies will likely experience delays in certain areas of development. However, they will achieve all the same milestones as other children, just on their own timetable. Now, should we hold those children accountable? Or are we to criticize them because they're on their own timetable? Hashem in His grace, the Creator in His grace, let us develop on our own specific timetable, that our timetable was mixed together with a larger mass of human beings, known as typical human beings, is no reason for us to look down at those who develop in an atypical fashion on their time scale. In monitoring the development of a child with Down syndrome, it is more useful to look at the sequence of milestones achieved rather than the age in which the milestone is reached. So there's a chart I'd like to share with you to contrast the range, the milestone barometer, the range for children with Down/Up syndrome, and for who are known as to be the typical range for typical children, babies. So in terms of gross motor skills, for a newborn emerging out of their first months up until they're 30 months old, to sit alone, it takes a child with Down syndrome 6 to 30 months on average. By a quote-unquote typical range child, it would take 5 to 9 months. So it could take up to 3 times as long for a child with Down syndrome to sit alone. In terms of the crawling process, a child, the range for children with Down syndrome is 8 to 22 months. And for the typical children, 6 to 12 months. So again, we see it's almost twice as much time it would take for a Down syndrome child to crawl. And on the other spectrum, it could take maybe 1.3 times longer for the child to crawl. Or say it would take 33% more time. In terms of the ability to stand, it takes the range for children with Down syndrome 1 to 3.25 years. And for a typical child, baby, 8 to 17 months. So again, it's almost twice the time it would take for Down syndrome children to learn how to stand. And the best scenario, according to this data that was submitted to us to share with you, the National Down Syndrome Society, could take another 50% more time to develop the ability to stand alone. In terms of walking alone, for a Down syndrome child, Up syndrome child, it could take 1 to 4 years, and for a typical child, 9 to 18 months. So again, here we see that walking alone could take 2 years plus more, or twice as much more. And the best case scenario, it would take about 33% more time, or 25% more time, between 25 and 30% more time to learn how to walk alone. Now, the language, we start to see a little bit of separation when it comes to two-word phrases, but by first word, it's basically in the same range. For children with Down syndrome, it could take 1 to 4 years to echo out, to speak out their first word between the age of 1 and 4 years. And for a typical child, 1 to 3 years. So it could take just one more year in the worst case scenario, or the Down syndrome child might start to speak at the same time that a regular child would speak. In terms of two-word phrases, this is where it could take a little bit longer. It could take 2 to 7.5 years, which of course can be a source of frustration for the developing child and as well as the adults who are involved in his or her care, the parents or significant others or the siblings. And for a typical range child, 15 months to 32 months. Now, why I could say it could be a source of frustration or anxiety, blessed souls, is that I had experience working with non-verbal autistic children, and there's a lot of emotion and frustration which builds up when a human being is not blessed and anointed with the wonderful faculty of being able to communicate with others through the blessed faculty of speech. So basically they're using body language, they are using facial expressions, gesturing of the hands. But it's very hard, and it can be very hard for the adults as well. There are forms of facilitated communication once the child learns how to adjust to the symbols involved with that process of communication. I mean, I've seen it myself with someone who was hit by a car at an early age and unfortunately, to this day, as far as I know, he'd be about 35 years old. He communicates through a board where he touches symbols to express what he's trying to say. So that's an important component, Blessed Souls, where if we understand that a child with Down/Up syndrome could take twice as long to develop two-word phrases, hopefully that will help us internalize, for those of us who interact with Down/Up syndrome children and developing children, that this is part of their development on their own timetable. Now, when we get to the category, the milestone of social/self-help, the news can range from encouraging to having we would have to have more patience with this level of atypical human being. In terms of responsive smile, it could take a Down/Up syndrome child 1.5 to 5 months to respond with a smile when being smiled at by someone other. For a regular, typical child, it could take 1 to 3 months. So we see there's not much of a difference there. At the most, there's a 2-month delay in the worst-case scenario, and a 2-plus week difference in delay in terms of the responsive smile. In terms of finger feeds, which I guess is when the child is beginning to feed him or herself, it takes between 10 and 24 months. So from 10 months to less than a year to 2 years. And for a typical child, it could take 7 to 14 months. When it comes to drinking from a cup unassisted, for the Down/Up syndrome child, it could take 12 months to 32 months. And for a typical child, 9 to 17 months. So those interacting with a Down/Up syndrome child, you see they're struggling with drinking, and they seem to be, you know, why does it take them more than a year and a half? Well, this is part of their timetable. In terms of using a spoon, for the Down/Up syndrome child, it could take 13 months to 39 months. Well, for the typical child, it could take 12 to 20 months. So it could take maybe just 1 month, 1 month more in the best case scenario, and it could take almost twice as many months in the worst case scenario. Now again, here the next category for bowel control could be a source of frustration for the child and for those facilitating the treatment, the parents, significant others, sisters and brothers. But again, this is their timetable, blessed souls. If we realize the Creator has patience with us, just to emanate out to us that we should have patience with them, that in terms of bowel control for the atypical child who has Down/Up syndrome, it could take 2 years to 7 years. And the typical range child could be 16 months to 42 months. Now, I can tell you this, that in working with autistic children, some of them up way past the age of 7, up into the age of even 9, 10, and 11, I've seen that they would go into society when we would integrate them into trips into various places in the Brooklyn, New York City area when I was involved in that type of work. Children up to 11 years old be wearing diapers, and they were at times toilet trained with success and failures, but they were more likely to have nightly diapers. So if they had loss of impulse control, then they would go in their diapers in the morning. They'd be changed, and then there would be a certain amount of time spent every day. Some of them had goals to learn how to control their bowels and use the toilet, with various degrees of success and failure. And then a portion of those children that we work with eventually would move on to being without a diaper. Dressing unassisted in an unassisted manner For a typical range child, it could take 3.25 to 5 years, based on this data collected. And for the Down syndrome child, it could take 3.5 years up to 8.5 years. So we see that also it could be like 1.6 times more time to, for a Down slash Up syndrome child to learn how to dress themselves. And at the best case scenario, it could take about 7% more time to teach them, that they should teach themselves. So what are the types of early intervention therapies, and how does each type address specific aspects of a baby's development? Physical therapy focuses on motor development. For example, during the first 3 or 4 months of life, an infant is expected to gain head control and the ability to pull to sitting positions with help, with no head lags, and enough strength in the upper torso to remain, or I should say to maintain an erect posture. Appropriate physical therapy may assist the baby with Down syndrome, who may have low muscle tone, in achieving this milestone. Before life and in the first months of life, the physical development remains the underlying foundation for all future progress. Babies learn through interaction with their environment. In order, they learn. Therefore, an infant must have the ability to move freely and purposefully. An infant's ability to explore his or her surroundings, reach and grasp toys, turn his or her head while watching a moving object, roll over and crawl are all dependent upon gross as well as fine motor development. These physical interactive activities foster understanding and mastery of the environment, stimulating cognitive, language, and social development. Another long-term benefit of physical therapy is that it helps prevent compensatory movement patterns that individuals with Down syndrome are prone to developing. Such patterns can lead to orthopedic and functional problems if not corrected. And I can tell you this, Basil, is that if there's an orthopedic need for the child, please intervene. My brother had a club foot and was given braces at an early age. And at this day, Baruch Hashem, at the age of 48, there's no trace of the fact that he had a club foot as a small child. Speech and language therapy is a critical component of early intervention. Even though babies with Down syndrome may not say their first words until 2 or 3 years of age. And my daughter, the student in speech therapy, just walked into the room with a big smile. Oh, you're talking about my subject, Abba? Yes, I am, Chaim Mushka. There are many pre-speech and pre-language skills that they must acquire before they can learn to form words. These include the ability to imitate and echo sounds, take turn-taking skills learned through the games like peekaboo, visual skills, looking at the speaker and objects, auditory skills, listening to music, speech, or speech sounds for lengthening periods of time, tactile skills, learning about touch, exploring objects in the mouth, and oral motor skills, using the tongue, moving the lips, and cognitive skills, understanding object permanence and cause and effect relationships. It doesn't matter, blessed souls, what the child is, as long as they're alive, we can help them in this process. And who knows, through the wonders of science that have been revealed, through the blessings of the Most High, through neuroplasticity, you can soften the blow of what they're trying to deal with, their down/up syndrome, by being so active with them in their speech and language therapy, even if they're not speaking yet, validating their feelings when they frown or cry, exposing them to new sounds, joyful, pleasant music, allowing them to push the button on the tape recorder or the MP3 or the smartphone or the iPad or the Blueberry, the Blackberry, the Strawberry, whatever you want to say. Let the child explore their world. A speech and language therapist can help with these and other skills, including breastfeeding, because breastfeeding employs the same anatomical structures used for speech. It can help strengthen a baby's jaw and facial muscles and lay the foundation for future communication skills. And my daughter, the future speech pathologist, is giving me a big smile in the corner. I'm waiting for her to give me 2 thumbs up. No? 2 thumbs up? Very good. She gave me 2 thumbs up, bless those. Occupational therapy helps children develop and master skills for independence. Occupational therapy can help with abilities such as opening and closing things, picking up and releasing toys of various sizes and shapes, stacking and building, manipulating knobs and buttons, experimenting with crayons, etc. Therapists also help children learn to feed and dress themselves and teach them skills for playing and interacting with other children. So break out the Play-Doh. Break out the Clay-Doh. Break out the silly putty for your young children. Of course, you have to watch over them that they don't put this into their mouth. But all this with the intent that early intervention can prevent a child with Down syndrome from reaching a plateau at some point in development. Let me read that again. Early intervention can also prevent a child with Down syndrome from reaching a plateau at some point in development. The overarching goal of early intervention programs is to enhance and accelerate development by building on a children's strengths and by strengthening those skills that are weaker in all areas of development. I'm going to read one more paragraph here, then we're going to go on to the Down blogger. How can parents benefit from early intervention programs? Programs of early intervention have a great deal to offer to parents in terms of support, encouragement, and information. The programs teach parents how to interact with their infant or toddler and how to meet their child's specific needs and how to enhance development. So, Bustles, if you know someone who has a child who is atypical, who has special needs, whatever you want to call him or her, and Rabbi Goldstock encourages us to think of these as atypical, unique human beings. You can go out of that angst, that agmas nefesh, that pain, that perhaps you're not doing enough, by reaching out and telling a person that you know who has such a unique child how they can benefit from getting involved in early intervention. There's no guilt. There's no shame. There's no sin. Forget about it. There's the active empowerment for those parents who were given the special blessing of bringing a child into the world, and that child happens to have unique needs. How great a merit it is to confer upon them that if they learn about how to work with their child with their unique needs, their atypical existence, how they are serving as living examples for other human beings and society as well, that we should not forsake those who need our help more than the typical human being at the beginning of his or her life. So that was me just gleaning some inspirations and powerful teachings from the National Down Syndrome Society, which you can access by going to /resources/therapies-development/early-intervention/. Now let's go to the Down blogger. We've got about 23 minutes to go on the program. I don't think we have any callers. We don't. So we're still going solo. Of course, this is not Han Solo. This is to show you or to share with you ourselves as a force, of course, greater than that which was talked about or one of the themes of Star Wars. So, this is a blog which is called Down Blogger. And in the left, upper left-hand corner it says, Communicating Partners and Dr. Jim McDonald's Fan Box. So this blog is entitled, Alex/Alexa Adoption Can Be a Beautiful Thing. And the blog starts out like this. Please visit my friend Meredith's blog. You have to go to the page to get to it, and send up a prayer for Alexa, the little girl they are trying to bring home. Alexa lived in a baby house until yesterday when she was moved to an institution. We found out that Alexa had been transferred from the baby house, orphanage, to a mental institution. These places are awful. And just writing this has once again started the tears running down my face. I cannot imagine at 4 years old, a child at the beginning of his or her life being put into one of these places. Please, please, please pray for Alexa. Pray that she will be healthy, that she will have enough to eat, that she will be treated with care, and she will be comforted by the ultimate comforter, which I think is referring to God. 4 years ago with Down syndrome, 4 years old with Down syndrome, Do you have any idea what the world is like in an institution in Europe for a small child with Down syndrome? This little girl is so loved and so wanted, sight unseen, by these amazing people. Their faith is helping them get through this. But God doesn't intend it that way. Don't get me wrong. He intends for us to be on our knees in tears and broken for his children, especially those that are orphans, especially those that are facing situations that no child should ever know possibly to occur in their lives. But fear is not from God. His hand is on our family. His hand is on Alexa and is leading the way, gently. But his grip is strengthening as we petition his throne. And that is exactly what we intend to do. We have done so daily, but admittedly not with nearly the gusto that we have had renewed today. That has changed. The floodgates are open. Thank you, everyone, that is lifting up our family in prayer. God hears each and every one. Today we are grieved. Tomorrow we plan. The next day, well, let's just take it a day at a time, shall we? My prayer tonight is that God will bless each one that has come to the Father for us today. May you be blessed as much as he has blessed us and abundantly more. Please take a moment to visit their blog or go see the little girl they love already at Reese's Rainbow. That's R-E-E-C-E apostrophe S, Rainbow. But again, you'd have to go to this Down blogger's blog spot. It's written as downbloggers.blogspot.com/2007 underline or underscore 10 underline 01 underline archive dot html. And that was written by Michelle in joining the conversations here on Down Blogger. I think we have time to read one more. Certainly very powerful sharing of awareness, blessed souls. I'd like to read one more. This is entitled on Down Blogger from 2007, War and Peace Mothers. Jim is the youngest of six kids. And by the way, blessed souls, I think these are blogs that are written by B'nai Noah, Gentiles. But we're talking about human beings here, blessed souls. Every one of us has a divine image. And whether you be Jew or Gentile, I think it's worth your while to listen to these things and see what you can do to make things better in the world. Consider the plights of these children and the anxiety that these parents go through and the families go through and the significant others go through, and see what you can do to participate more in making it a better world, whether it be specifically with atypical children or an elderly person or a disabled person or a mentally ill person that's severely mentally ill. But we're focusing specifically on the needs of Down/Up syndrome children. So again, here's this article, War and Peace-Mothers. Now, Jim is the youngest of six kids, born to a devoted mother who made perfect meals and took her children to church and kept their family strong and united. He was spoiled somewhat by his position in the family. After all, he was the youngest, the cute one, the baby. His mom had three children early in her marriage, one after another, R a boy, K a girl, and M another girl. She must have gotten too close to the empty nest syndrome, because when that batch of babies was becoming teens and young adults, she had another, three more to even things out. D a girl, M a boy, and then Jim, three of each, a perfect mix, three boys and three girls. Now Jim, baby Jim, got the best of both worlds in some ways. He was doted on by his older siblings and vied for a place with the younger ones. As close-knit and loving as his family was, they, like all of us, had their own demons to cast out. Their skeletons were not necessarily in the closet. They came out and rampaged in the public eye for the world to see. For unfortunately, Jim's dad was a raging alcoholic, normally a good and hard-working man, who found his solace, unfortunately, Hashem have mercy on him, in the bottle. As gentle as he was with his grandchildren, and without question he adored all of them, but he could be violent and abusive, especially to his youngest two boys. My sister-in-law tells me stories of her coming in and taking the boys out of the house because she generally feared he would hurt them. She is married to the oldest son, and she has memories of Jim as a little boy that are at all at once sweet and terrible, beautiful and horrifying. They all laugh at how when his biggest brother joined the Navy, leaving behind a beloved car, little Jim decided to make R happy by painting his car for him. Someone looked out the window to see this four-year-old little boy, paint rollers in hand, painting every square inch of that car. Their dad was a painter, so therefore the materials were handy. However, Jim does not like this story for some reason. I get the feeling the punishment didn't fit the crime, and while everyone else laughs about it, he doesn't remember this episode with fondness. Jim's next closest sister was about 6 years older than him. Dee was deeply intelligent and deeply troubled. She read ferociously, searching endlessly for answers to all of life's problems. She had a deep faith, raised in a Catholic home, but she was seemingly interested in Buddhism and Wicca, Mahatma Gandhi, and marijuana. No one talks about Dee much. Most of her teen years were spent somewhere institutionalized, put away, locked up. She lived with an aunt for a while, and though she was in and out of his life, Jim adored her in a way that little boys love teen girls. She doted on him, mothered him. Perhaps he filled a void she was trying to desperately fill. She also introduced him at 13 to drugs, the first time he ever smoked pot. It was his beloved big sister. Just a year older than my Jessie now, I cannot imagine this is what transpired. I blamed her for a very long time for shirking the responsibility of helping raise him right. She should have known better, but her demons were far more entrenched than marijuana and far-fetched ideas. Dee was teetering on the edge of insanity, consumed with paranoia and fear, schizophrenia and anger, a very, very angry young woman. When I met Jim, she was still living at home, and we would giggle at her antics sometimes. She was impolite, to say the least. Bodily functions were wildly amusing to her. She would pass gas loudly, then sit laughing about it. She ate weird foods, talked crazy talk, and adored her baby brother. She seemed amused by me, no doubt figuring puppy love had struck. We were all, of course, at that time just 16 and 17 years old. Even then, I knew that their household secrets I would never know. Clean as a whistle, warm, overflowing with food, and French-speaking, laughing people, there was always an edge to it all. Like the feeling you get watching people walk a tightrope, willing to toe the line, holding your breath when they slide off course, your heart beating faster and faster when they start to fall. In their lives, the safety net was the silence. It seemed the unwritten rule. Quote, we don't discuss those things, unquote, end of quote. Well, that means Dee's escalating craziness, Dad's alcoholism, and occasional sadistic abuse, or the simmering resentment that ran like a live wire through them all. We just didn't talk about it. Coming from my own dysfunctional, to say the least, family, I knew when to avert my eyes. You don't need to ask questions when you already know the answers. Jim and I moved away to start a new life downstate. Dee moved to Connecticut and started hers there. She had a great job, was doing well in school, yet still being pursued by the ghosts and goblins of her mind. We would hear bits and pieces. She was hospitalized. She was in a supported living unit. She met a man. She would call with ever-increasing wildness. She broke her back. She was stinking rich. She fell under a bus. The spiral she was in seemed never-ending, and watched her free fall was painful, especially seeing it through the eyes of her little brother, who both loved and feared her by now. We were making our way through life, trying to get ahead and struggling to make ends meet. Now firmly away from both of our families, we went home perhaps once a year and kept in touch by phone as much as possible. We got snippets of everyone's lives, saw them all now and again, but were increasingly limited in our contact. Families grow, and that means they grow apart sometimes as well, unfortunately. Time, distance, and circumstances were fueling the divide. We heard bits and pieces about Dee, but hadn't seen her in several years. We knew that she was dating a man named John. Then we heard she was pregnant, with twins no less. She had a very light hold of sanity at the time, and her paramour was brilliantly troubled along with her. No people seemed less equipped to raise twin boys than those two, in retrospect. The mother in me is saddened that I didn't reach out to her to try to help, to offer support. It was more a matter of whispering behind my hand, she can't raise a baby. Jim and I had our daughter, Kristen, and it was hard enough with all our faculties in place. How would they feed the babies? How would they do this? With no money, no vehicle, and a genuine failure to understand even the most basic principles of caring for another living human being. They barely kept themselves alive. The twins were born in 1994, tiny, fragile little boys. The state immediately took custody of them. Dee and her partner were called inept, incapable at their various diagnoses, deciding for them. In the eyes of the law, they could not parent their children. Placed in a foster home, they grew and they grew and they grew. Jim's older brother, R, and his wife fought for custody. The hearings dragged on for years. What could have been ended gently with the babies being raised by family became an all-out war. In and out of the courts years later, they were taken out of the foster home and finally placed with R and his family. By then, Dee and John had found themselves pregnant again. Jim and I had a son we named Jesse, a beautiful little boy who was the apple of our eyes. If I had only known then what I would do now, I would have allowed him to be our only son, to have a sane and whole throughout his infancy and toddlerhood. Our daughter was seven, our son was one. Then when we won the right, after a year-long battle, to bring Dee and John's youngest son home to live with us. There had been no question. This child would never be raised by his parents. Their hold on sanity was loosening. Their anger was losing. The first two was palpable. We suddenly became the enemy. We're now taking away their son to another state where visits would be nearly impossible. We, in the judge's eyes, were more acceptable. A little brother wasn't so little anymore. And he was deemed more responsible, a more fit parent. That had to hurt. We brought Alex home when he was 8 months old. He had been in the foster home, and in my heart, I knew it was not a good place for him. I cried and cried over the months, hearing about his life. We finally met him clandestinely in McDonald's. He was fragile, pale, and tiny. He needed us. We were determined, and we finally won the right to bring him home. Our new son joined our one-year-old and our nine-year-old. Life was good. 3 years later, at a pediatric appointment, Alex was determined to have cerebral palsy. He was way behind on milestones. He could not yet roll over at 8 months. He bruised easily. A blood test revealed that he had von Willebrand's disease, like hemophilia. It would mean human blood product every time he had a cut or needed surgery. He was diagnosed with the cardiofacial syndrome on top of it. There was a question of fetal alcohol syndrome to add icing to the cake. I loved him, and I said repeatedly, I can handle that. He was enrolled in a special preschool. He smiled such a brilliant smile, but he seemed to have dark secrets of his own. 4 weeks after bringing him home on August 20th, the day before Jim's birthday, we were pregnant again, unplanned to say at the least. We had tried for years to have our son, and even saw an infertility doctor even. Had him got Alex and then pregnant. Our lives were rapidly becoming crazy, too. I can do this, I said, and we moved forward. Dee called often, and John did too. They loved their son, but they seemed stuck on how to show that love. Dee would send packages of things from oftentimes clothing that was 10 times too big. She would send spices poured into envelopes, broken crayons on one earring. Always some odd, bizarre thing. I learned to know that there was a package from her by the smell walking to the mailbox. I was frustrated, angry, overwhelmed. She would call and be very unkind. She did not like that we were taking care of her son. She resented us and told us so. Her angry tirades often ended with me slamming the phone down in tears. All the time the children were growing, and so was my belly. In the June of 1998, our daughter was born. Sierra was much wanted. If a surprise, we discovered on the day she was born that she was packing even more surprises. Down syndrome became the talk of the town. Our daughter, our youngest and last child, had been born with Down syndrome. Life changed drastically that day, and although we didn't know it, it did change everything. We have been licensed as a relative foster home and licensed by space allowance per child. We barely squeaked by. When I found out I was pregnant, I was told that we didn't have enough square footage to maintain our license. With already four children in the home, we took out a loan and added on. The walls were literally down the day I left to go deliver Sierra. Workers everywhere trying to get it all done. I already had, remember, a 9-year-old, an 11-and-a-half-year-old, and a 1-year-old, and a newborn to care for. When Sierra was born, there was literally no walls on the front of our home. There was plastic sheeting stapled up, and the guy we had hired to build the thing was not interested in hurrying up. In his defense, he was now working around me and my new mom of a child with an unexpected disability nerves, a curious 9-year-old, an even more curious toddler, and a tiny, fragile 1-year-old who could bleed to death from any injury he might receive on a said workman's tools, stray nails, etc. plus a newborn. I was over my head and I knew it. Depressed, scared, angry, volatile, and all those words could apply. I'd gone from a nice, quiet life as a mom of two to a mom of four, three, them being babies, two with special needs, in a hurry. For much of the first week of those first weeks, Alex was in his crib in his room just off the living room where he could see everything and everyone and be safe from all the commotion. Sierra was often in her room, being two, a newborn. She slept a lot and didn't much care where that was. After a week or so of begging the guy to hurry, I fired him in a fit after finding him smoking pot in the new addition. I was furious. So was he. But before he left, while words were being shouted, he promised to pay me back by making an allegation to DHS about me and how I left Alex and Sarah in the rooms all day. I heard him, but I was so angry I couldn't respond. How else was I to keep them safe? I could barely contain Jesse, never mind two infants. I cried for a day, waiting for the knock on the door. Instead, I received a police call and a pledge. Hey, can we just come in and see how things are doing? They did, in fact, spoke to Christian and Jesse, checked everyone to make sure everyone seemed okay, and left with the promise of an all-clear letter to be mailed. All-clear is cool when you've been accused of abuse / neglect, but it does never go away in your mind. Once it's there, it leaves a smell that you can never be fully rid of. The letter goes on into the file marked unsubstantiated and noted with the babysitter's comments about he was there, saw the whole thing, and could verify they did it out of retaliation. Today, 9 years later, that letter, the accusation, still sits there. I've seen the man who lodged it there several times. Once at a funeral for a mutual friend, he tried to hug me, and when I resisted, he said something about forgiving him and letting go. I wanted to remind him that his lie started the ball rolling that would eventually cost Alex's life. So babies being babies, they grew. Sierra thrived and she was meeting her milestones, smiling at all the time, a happy, joyful, sweet little girl. She was sanity for me, proof that I could do things all right. Alex was in wonderful preschool, which sent a social worker once a week to sit with me and talk about his needs. I treasured her as a friend and thank God for her insights. She, above all, made me feel like a good mom again. I needed that since I was still terrified and overwhelmed and disheartened by the allegation. Alex was 11 years and 2 months, quite delayed cognitively and physically, and with escalating behavior and emotional issues we were desperate to address. Jesse was a terrible chaos, all boy, rough and tumble and ready for action. He wanted to wrestle Buddy and Alex wasn't. He loved physical contact and would create intricate walkways, built of furniture, laundry basket, stuff in which to leap across the living room. He was determined to have a playmate and dragged an unwilling Alex along with him. Christian was a third grader, and I'm sad to say, at that time, with her, it was somewhat of a blur. I was grateful she was in school. At least there, she had some routine and sanity. She gave up a room for the boys to share, squeezed into a tiny hole of a room that meant to be a den. She didn't complain about her life, which had changed drastically and suddenly. But she started spending a lot of time in her room with her door closed. I regret that time I lost with her in those days. I regret that Jesse got scolded often for trying to make Alex play. I regret that I was frazzled and bewildered by all the requests and emotionally not in very good shape. I regret that when Dee called to check on her son, I was angry right back at her, and we felt that we were each other's competition. I was his mother. I was doing all the hard work. I wrote her and chose to be short and abrupt with her. In fact, I was becoming short and abrupt with everyone, including my own children. Alex was two and a half when he had a crib accident. He had loose ligaments and hated his crib. He wanted to get out and get to the fridge. His food thing had begun to consume us. There was a question of Prader-Willi syndrome. He ate constantly till he vomited. We eat that too if you weren't quick enough. He was constantly crying for food, constantly watching us eat after wolfing down his own food. We were meeting with a child psychologist told us that it was likely his emotional reaction to his first 8 months in the foster home. We might not have given enough. He was not given enough of love, attention, food, and he was filling that void with food, dog food, cat food, people food. It didn't matter. In any event, I heard a terrible thump one night just as Christian came down the hall. Christian, I should say. K-R-I-S-T-I-N. I asked her what she was doing. I told her to be quiet. The babies were sleeping. She said it wasn't her. I asked her to peek at Alex in his room. She did and hollered out for help. And there he was, lying half on the floor, one leg still stuck on the baby on the crib slats. It looked like he had tried to put one leg up and over and wrap it back through to brace himself from, and then fell. It looked bad. I knew in his heart that his injury would always be looked as something which I might have caused. I was grateful beyond words to have the ER doc tell me unquestionably it did not look like abuse to him, but a simple crib injury exacerbated by his CP, his cerebral palsy. The mechanism of the injury made it clear. He dislocated his hip straight up and down, and unless I hung him by one leg and shaken him perfectly straight, it was impossible for this to happen via abuse. Still, I faced a long searching look at his DHS worker, who I called immediately. She met with the doctor, she met with our social worker and psychologist, and they all told her to give us the supports we needed to make it work and stop putting too much pressure on me. I knew that I was beginning to change in my feelings. I loved Alex, but his needs were too much for me. I was overwhelmed by then that I wasn't a very good mother to any of them. I was angry. I felt slighted by the allegation of abuse. I was humiliated. I was angry. I began to realize that I needed to find a way out. I wanted to keep Alex, but I needed to end the DHS involvement. I told them either we adopt him or take him back, but stop controlling every aspect of our lives. Stop telling me he isn't mine when I'm killing myself to make him better. Let's suppose at this point we'll try to read it in 2 weeks. We won't have a program next week at this time. But you see, this is some of the dilemmas, the experiences that such brave human beings go through in order to try to raise a child with special needs. So that being said, we're going to end off with a prayer in the form of Psalms 121 by Rabbi Yosef Kaduner. And this young man who lives out in the Holy Land has what to sing and share about with us in his praise of the Creator. It's just a matter of me queuing up the music. Experiencing a little bit of a technical difficulty here. Let's just get to that song. In the meantime, Lassos, I want to wish everyone Ahava Chad, one love, Goel Echad, one destiny kolano, Badarchi Noam, in a peaceful way and in a pleasant way. Laham Shich, to be continued, Bezer Hashem Yisparech, continued with the help of the Most High. And I just want to remind everyone, I know I've said it so many times, that you've got to be good. You can be good. In fact, the empowerment of your being good is predicated on the fact that the Creator is connected with an attribute called a Teva HaTov Lehetiv. Is the nature of the good to do good. And the Creator is waiting patiently for all of us with our own special timetable to increase our acts of kindness towards each other, to eradicate this unnecessary hatred in the world. But let's just end off by reading from the prophetic words of King David, Na'im Yisminos Yisrael, the sweet string of Israel, a song for ascent. I shall raise my eyes to the mountains from where my help come. My help is from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to falter. Your guardian will not slumber. Behold, the garden of Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your guardian. The Lord is your shadow. He is by your right hand. By day the sun will not smite you, nor the moon at night. The Lord will guard you from all evil. He will guard your soul. The Lord will guard your going out and your coming in from now into eternity. Without further ado, Yosef Kaduner's Shir Malos. This is a cappella, simply the beautiful, blessed voice of Yosef Kaduner singing Psalms 121. And even if you don't understand the Hebrew, blessed soul, that's okay. Listen to the feeling and the soul and the love for other human beings, for the nation of Israel, for the nations of the world. Rabbi Yosef Kaduner. Take care, everyone.
הנה לא ינום, ינום ולא ישן, שומר ישראל. השם שומרך, השם צילך, על יד ימינך. יומם השמש לא יקקה, וירח בלילה. השם ישמורך מכל רע, ישמור את נפשך, השם ישמור צאתך ובואך, מעתה ועד עולם. שיר למעלה, שמשמור צדך ובואה מעתה ועד